Gary, over to you.
Thanks, Wayne. Morning, everyone. This is Agenda Paper 11, which is IAS 39 or IFRS 9, term extending options in a fixed rate debt instrument. The committee received a request to address an issue related to embedded derivatives in the scope of IAS 39 and IFRS 9. Specifically, the request was around a fixed rate debt instrument that's issued that contains an embedded term extending option that's in the scope of IAS 39 or IFRS 9 because the guidance has been carried forward into IFRS 9. So we refer to IFRS 9 in the paper, but the issue applies to current IAS 39 as well. And the issue is whether or not this term extending option that's in this fixed rate debt instrument should either be accounted for as an embedded derivative that requires bifurcation and derivative accounting, or alternatively, should it be not separated and possibly then just accounted for when the loan is extended. So in other words, possibly ignored until the extension occurs. Now, in terms of the paper, we've set out in paragraphs 8 to 13 of the paper the four views that we think may arise with respect to this type of instruments. And in briefly, I mean, the four views that we think you could have is view one, which is that there is an embedded derivative that requires separation. View two, there is an embedded derivative, but it's clearly and closely related, and therefore it is not separated. View three is that there is an embedded feature, but it doesn't meet the definition of a derivative, and therefore we get kind of two sub-views from that, one being, therefore, that feature can be ignored completely. The other view, which is view 3b, which basically says that feature still needs to be stripped out of the host contract and accounted for in accordance with the applicable IFRS. Now, we think this confusion may arise in practice as a result of the inconsistent guidance in IFRS 9 that was carried forward from IAS 39, because looking at the relevant paragraphs in IFRS 9, IFRS 9 explains that a term extending option that doesn't reset to a market rate is not closely related, so that's in black and white in the standard. However, a couple of paragraphs later, the guidance then says, however, if you've got a prepayment option that is closely related as long as the prepayment option is exercised at amortized cost or at fair value on the day that you exercise it. So the problem is you've got two pieces of guidance, and economically a prepayment option can be the same as a term extending option, which I think we tried to illustrate in the paper. So the problem is you've got this contradiction where you can have two instruments that are economically the same, but they would be accounted for differently depending on how they're structured. The second reason why we think there's this problem in practice is because, again, that first paragraph that says if you've got a term extending option that doesn't reset to market rates, it's not clearly and closely related, so again, that's black and white. But the other issue then is if you look at what this term extending option actually represents, again, we think in substance this might represent a loan commitment. And in order for an embedded derivative to be split out from a host contract, it needs to meet the definition of a derivative first. That's in the scope of IFRS 9, and loan commitments of these type would probably not be within the scope of IFRS 9. So for those two reasons, it seems we've got conflicting guidance that's contained in IFRS 9, which is, I think, why we have this diversity in practice, which was confirmed when we did the outreach. Folks are split in terms of the way that they are accounting for these instruments, some bifurcating them, some ignoring them for one or both of those reasons that I just ran through. Now, you'll note in the paper we don't discuss the merits of each of the views or provide a recommendation on what view we think is superior. And the reason that we've done that is because at the January 2012 board meeting, the ISB and the FASB decided to jointly re-deliberate selected parts of the classification and measurements aspects of their standards, in other words, reopening IFRS 9. And the requirement to bifurcate and the basis for bifurcation on the financial asset side is going to be re-deliberated or considered jointly, as well as any knock-on impacts. The board didn't go into a huge amount of detail, but one of those knock-on impacts that was mentioned in that meeting might be the symmetry between financial assets and financial liabilities. So if the boards decide that they don't need embedded derivative guidance under for financial assets, they might similarly decide to reconsider financial liabilities, and that might have knock-on implications, which means this issue might go away, in other words, or we might be looking at different guidance. Now, that January board meeting occurred after the submission was received by the staff, and that's why we kind of have this timing issue where when the issue came in, we think it made sense, it was definitely an issue. But since that January board meeting, we don't think that the issue meets the criterion in the annual improvements or agenda criterion for the one that says, is there a current or planned board project in the near future? Because now we believe that the answer to that is yes, whereas when the submission sent in, the answer to that would have been no. So in summary, we think the current wording in IAS 39 and hence IFRS 9 is contradictory, and this is what's giving rise to the diversity in practice. However, because the board will potentially amend the guidance in IFRS 9 related to, and possibly IAS 39, related to embedded derivatives, we don't think that the committee should address this issue at this point in time because of that reason. However, when the boards do re-deliberate the guidance on financial liabilities, they don't address this issue, we think the committee should take it back on. But again, having said that, we also think we should make the board aware again of this issue so that they do take it into consideration when they're thinking about financial assets and financial liabilities. In terms of the question for the committee, does the committee agree with the staff recommendation which I've just ran through? In other words, do you agree that you shouldn't address this at this point in time, but rather recommend that the board consider this issue when the board re-deliberates classification and measurement requirements for financial liabilities?
Bernd?
I agree with the conclusion that we should refer this to the board or do not put it, take it onto the agenda. I wonder if we might be able to give the board some guidance or some idea what we think would be the right answer on the way. And I'm in the bifurcating camp.
Others? Charlotte?
I agree with the conclusion. I don't think we should look at it now. I think there are lots of differences in the bifurcation guidance, sort of nuances that create differences between the gaps, and I suspect the board's going to look at all of those. And I wouldn't give guidance now because you can. I think that it's clearly there's a difference, and so it would almost be more than an interpretation. So,
Andrew,
I agree with the staff, and whilst I understand where Bernd's coming from, I think it would be difficult for us to give guidance when we don't know the wider context of where the bifurcation debate is headed. So I just think we should just leave it.
All right.
I agree with the staff. I would just support your comment that we need to follow up whether the ISB actually deals with this issue, because I can recall so many issues that IS 39 that had been forwarded to the ISB, and we've been told, well, there is IFRS 9, the revisions and so on, and ultimately they have not been dealt with. So let's keep a track on how it is dealt with. The other comment is you are not proposing an agenda rejection, are you? Will there be an agenda rejection to acknowledge the diversity or to acknowledge the how is it going to work?
So we need to report an update that it's been considered and decided not to take it onto the agenda. The proposal, I think, or the assessment at least that we did was through annual improvements. So we would report then onto the board, present the issue to them and say, look, you know, we've considered this, the committee's recommending that you address this through the IFRS 9 work, and that we don't include it in annual improvements. And as such, it wouldn't, because it would then go to the board, it wouldn't go out for a tentative agenda decision, but we would nevertheless report that we were going to take it to the board with an update.
Guido.
I agree with the conclusion that's drawn in this paper, but I was asking myself, so that will only be taken care of, hopefully, by the board in IFRS 9 which leaves us for some time with diversity in practice up until IBRS 9 will be applied. I know there's a lot of diversity in practice out there, and it is a significant issue because you have these extension options almost in every contract that I've seen. So, I mean, I just wanted to bring this to the attention of the committee that for the IS 39 time, we would still have this diversity in practice, whatever the board or whenever the board will deal with it in IFRS 9, we still have it for at least 2 or 3 years.
I assume, Gary, that you've discussed this issue with Sue and the financial instruments team.
Yeah.
So that none of this is any surprise to them?
No.
I figured that would be the answer, but I thought we ought to get it on the record. All right. I see general agreement with the staff recommendation that we suggest to the board that they deal with this to the extent that it falls with, I would want to be careful with the wording, to say to the extent that it falls within the board's plan for a limited redeliberation of 9. Because we don't want to create the impression that we're expanding the scope of that. So I think we do need to be a little careful on that part. I've seen some board members agree with that. So, Philippe?
I think it's correct. I think the board is intending to address classification and measurement based on the cash flow characteristics test and whether that type of option meets or doesn't meet the cash flow characteristics test, which is only time value of money and credit risk, etc. And then the next question is bifurcation, yes or no, and there is a convergence issue there with the US for assets. And then also the board has said that the impact of those decisions on the liabilities will be considered. So I think it's already part of the overall plan of the board.
I agree. I just think in communicating to the world, we don't want to create the impression that we're suggesting to the board that they expand the opening of 9. All right, that's what we'll do. Patrick, you're in the room.
So we move on to